Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everybody. Once upon a time, Democratic Party leaders chose a nominee for citywide office by looking for the most obvious Italian name they could find in the City Hall directory. And candidate Vincent Impellitteri was born. He went on to be mayor. So writes New York Times reporter and history buff Sam Roberts in an article the other day. So what about today, when the buzz is about Bill de Blasio as a post-identity politics candidate? Is identity losing its grip on us? Or is this just media hype? Sam Roberts joins me now, along with Raihan Salam, National Review and CNN contributor and senior fellow at the R Street Institute, a center-right think tank. He's been looking at potential paths to victory for Republican Joe Loda. Hi, Raihan. Hi, Sam. Hi, Sam. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Sam, tell us more of that Impellitteri story. When was that?
Well, it was in 1945, and the Democrats had Bill O'Dwyer on the top of the ticket and Lazarus Joseph, who was Jewish, running for controller, and they needed an Italian to round out the ticket. It was the era of balanced tickets when people actually voted straight party tickets, and they literally went through the index of the Green Book looking for the longest Italian name and came up with Vincent Impellitteri, who at the time was a law secretary to a judge, and he became the head of the Board of Aldermen and ultimately became the mayor.
You suggest that was the heyday of identity politics in New York. Why?
Heyday, maybe not in a positive sense, but certainly in terms of popularity, when people knew they had to have balanced tickets to appeal to all elements of the city. This was, you know, another way of saying diversity, which became a more fashionable politic way of describing it later on. But this was appealing to various ethnic and racial groups in the city trying to get a ticket elected, and they were typically very successful at it. Some of them more than others, of course.
So most of our listeners know by now that de Blasio won the Democratic primary with the largest share of black, Latino, male, female, gay, straight, and Jewish votes, and people whose last name sounds something like Impellitteri. So is this our first post-identity politics election?
Well, I don't think it's post-identity. I think that's the sort of conventional wisdom. But when you look at what Bill de Blasio is and what he did, you can make a compelling argument that he hijacked the identity of various other people. He is married to a woman who is black, who previously identified herself as a lesbian. He did very well among the black vote because of the issues he took on stop and frisk and other stands. And when you look at that, he is sort of guilty of identity theft in the best sense of the word. He sort of stole the identities of other candidates in a very positive sense. And I think identity politics is still very much alive and well in New York.
Raihan, have you asked yourself that question about a post-identity politics election and if it indicates something larger about a changing city?
I think Sam's point is very well taken, but it's important for people to keep in mind that the composition of New York City's population is always changing. For example, 3 million of the 8.3 million people living in New York weren't living here on 9/11. It's an extraordinary number. And when you look at a lot of these groups, for example, African Americans in New York City, a very big chunk of that population is foreign born. Or when you walk around the streets in New York, you'll notice that there are many Asian Americans. They represent a pretty small part of the electorate, however, because many of the Asian folks living in New York City are not citizens. The same is true of Latinos as well. So when I look at the de Blasio coalition, I really see it as ideological. And I think that many of the African Americans who voted for him, I'm sure, were moved by the fact that he has a multiracial family. But I think that many of them thought that, well, gosh, you know, I'm a liberal voter, and it seems that Bill de Blasio is the strongest, most compelling liberal or progressive candidate. So why not vote for him? Whereas Bill Thompson is a reflection of an older African American politics that was much more like the ethnic machine politics of New York City in earlier eras that Sam very beautifully describes.
And I wonder, Raihan, if we assume too much about identity voting in the first place, like it's some kind of mindless nationalism. Is it really that people reflexively vote for the candidate from the same race, religion, sex, neighborhood, and any other demographic as them? Or is it subtler than that, that we look for candidates who seem to carry water for our issues?
And chances are,
Sam, and chances are the people who are, like us demographically, wind up being the most politically aligned?
I think there's a little bit of both. You're absolutely right. We like to identify with people who look a little bit like us, but also who sound a little bit like us. So when they're articulating issues that we identify with, whoever we happen to be, there's a natural inclination, a natural empathy, a natural predisposition to support those people. And I think that's what we saw here. You saw that among blacks whose articulation of Bill de Blasio's issue on stop and frisk resonated very much with them in a way that surpassed the fact that whether he was black or not and whether there was a black candidate in the race.
And Reihan, what about the Asian American vote, which did go more for John Liu than any other candidate? Do you chalk that up to it being a newer population of voters, or it was so small? It was a smaller Asian American vote than I think 4 years ago, so it's not like there was some big surge for John Liu. But this is the one group that deviated from the pattern.
Yeah, and John Liu also did decently among African American voters, and he had long had strong ties to that community as well. Indeed. But yeah, I think that that's probably true. The idea that with newer arrivals, newer groups of foreign-born folks who've naturalized to become U.S. citizens, there tends to be a greater orientation towards who are community leaders backing. And I think that that's one of the complexities of New York City politics.
And another way to look at it, Sam, if Bill Thompson was seen as having half the passion that de Blasio did about black and Latino issues like poverty and the police, he might have carried those voters hands down. If Quinn had been seen as having half the passion of de Blasio about poverty, which is actually largely a women's issue, and early childhood education, also one, that she could have built a cool little gender gap. So the group still voted on their identity group's issues, arguably, but the candidate has to be seen as serious about them, you think?
I think that's absolutely so, that it's the issues that trumped the identity politics based on ethnicity or race this time. It was Bill de Blasio who was clearly the most liberal, passionate candidate in the race. You can argue that John Liu was more of a populist in some respects, but Bill de Blasio articulated those positions, and not surprisingly, the liberal candidate in the Democratic primary, especially a multi-candidate Democratic primary, wound up being victorious, and by a surprising margin.
Of course, I could ask, does identity even exist if you can so easily hijack it, to use your word?
Well, I think it does exist, but I think it's fungible, as was proved in this election, that people are not as reflexive as they used to be. And I think you could make an argument that they used to be that, and that's why, you know, the Democratic leaders back in 1945 were specifically looking for an Italian candidate, because they wanted to balance that ticket and knew that it would appeal to Italian Americans. Now it's not quite that easy.
Sam Roberts from The New York Times, Reihan Salaam from National Review, CNN, the think tank R Street. And listeners, let's take calls on two tracks here. If you went outside your identity group to vote for de Blasio, was that something unusual for you? Did you think of it in those terms? 212-433-WNYC. And if you've been a Bloomberg or Giuliani Democrat in the past, do you plan to give Joe Loda a good look? And we'll shift the conversation more into that side of the equation now, 212-433-9692. Either of those questions, if you went outside your identity group to vote for de Blasio, was that something unusual for you? And if you've been a Bloomberg or Giuliani Democrat in the past, do you plan to give Joe Loda a good look? 212-433-9692. And on that, how about you Giuliani Clinton voters from the 90s? You still here? Or are you Gore, Kerry, and Obama Bloomberg voters from the last few elections? Are you coming home to de Blasio this time without thinking about it too much? Or what kind of decision-making process are you going through now that we have our general election nominees as of yesterday morning? 212-433-9692. So, Reihan, to turn to the general election, only about 650,000 people voted in the Democratic primary, less than 100,000 in the Republican primary. So less than 750,000 people overall. How many people do you expect to vote in the general election?
That's very hard to say. My guess is that it will be somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million. But I haven't thought about it very deeply, to tell you the truth.
So who are all those other people? Do they break down demographically like the Democratic primary voters or unlike the Democratic primary voters?
It is a bit different. For example, if you look at Asian American voters, they're far more likely to be unaffiliated, that is to be independent voters rather than to as opposed to various other groups. You certainly have a large number of people who didn't participate in the Democratic primary despite being registered Democrats who will come out. And these are presumably people who are less active or engaged Democrats. So I think that that will tend to change the composition.
Sam, same questions?
Well, I think the estimate of the turnout is right, but one of the things that's so striking is that the last time we elected Republicans in this city, which was a pretty substantial number of times in terms of their service, in terms of their terms over the past 50 years, there was a crisis of sorts. The city in crisis that Lindsay inherited, he was also a liberal dealing with that crisis. Giuliani had a crisis in crime and also was benefited from a referendum on Staten Island secession. And of course, Bloomberg 9/11 and spending $70 or more million to get elected the first time around, those really skewed the equation to a great extent. It is unusual for a Republican to be able to win in New York. We forget that after these past 24 or so years.
Reihan, do you have that same crisis analysis of why Giuliani and Bloomberg were able to prevail? I would add to that narrative, by the way, that the third term for Bloomberg was also a crisis point. If September 11th was the 2001 marker, it was September 15th in 2008, the collapse of Lehman and all of that, that began the crisis that Bloomberg hung his third term run on.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to it, and also the sense of a public safety crisis during that earlier period. What's striking to Sam's point about the amount of money that Michael Bloomberg spent is that, you know, when he ran for his third term, he spent about $100 million to overcome his party ID vulnerability, you could say. And Joe Lota is not going to have anywhere close to that, regardless of how much super PAC spending there is. It's very hard to imagine that he'll be able to close that gap. So I think the structural edge is definitely with the Democratic candidate.
Let's take a phone call. Ziad in West Harlem. You're on WNYC. Hello, Ziad.
Hi, Brian. Could you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. I was a candidate in District 7 in the city council, and some papers and the experts and polls expected me to finish at the top, whether first, second, or third. I happen to be an Arab American who was highly qualified for the position. I was the chair of my community board two times, been on the community board 15 years. I'm the founding chair of the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Memorial on the Upper Manhattan Empowerment Zone Board, started one of the largest National Endowment of the Arts winning arts organizations in Northern Manhattan, NOMA. I'm the founding chair of that in your neighborhood, Brian. And at the end of the day, I received only 4% of the vote. So Bill Lynch, the political consultant who's running my campaign, obviously prior to his passing and his firm ran my campaign. We ran a really good, solid campaign. On the internet, we had more likes than any other candidate at the end of the day, and the polls proved it, and the numbers proved it, even though we had,
So what's your point about identity politics? I know that district. There were 10 candidates in that district,
right.
And your last name is Ramadan, right?
Right.
Do you think that hurt you?
I think it did because, let's put it this way. The polls have proved that in the African-American communities, they voted overwhelmingly for the African-American candidate. In the Upper West Side and white and Jewish communities, they voted for that candidate.
Yeah.
And in the Latino communities, they voted exclusively for the two Latino candidates, though many people feel I was just as qualified, or if not more qualified, than all of them and ran a tremendous campaign and spent four times more money with some of the best political consultancies, the Northeast has to offer.
Zia, do you think your experience has any implications for the mayoral race?
I don't think so, because I think at the citywide level, I think you sort of transcend that and go to messages. I think that John Liu, for example, had he not had a lot of the problems that he had, he would have done really, really well. I think people really liked him, and they still do. They just say it's unfortunate we couldn't vote for him because we didn't think he was going to win. So, I do think at the city level, you transcend those things, and people look towards the issues.
A little bit
but
more.
When you get down to, the communities and the district, I think that race politics plays very, very heavily.
Ziad, thank you very much. Mario in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Mario.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I really do think that identity politics are breaking down and quickly. I'm a gay voter. in Brooklyn. And truthfully, I thought about voting for Christian Quinn because, you know, it'd be history making, but I just didn't really, you know, I couldn't figure out what her core was. And ultimately, I was more moved by sort of de Blasio and the things that he was talking about, even like the horse carriage issue in Central Park. And when I got in there, you know, I voted for de Blasio. But funny enough, when I watched the returns that night and I saw Quinn doing so poorly and conceding and her wife there sort of tearing up, I did have this pang like, ah, you know, did I sort of not back my own? But, and it's sort of kind of hung with me since that day, even though I feel like I voted for the candidate who I believed in. There's sort of that little trace of like, especially with the coverage that's now like, oh, you know, maybe people didn't vote for her because she was a woman or she was gay or whatever. It is sort of kind of staying with me, you know?
Yeah, well, that's very articulate about the ambivalence that you felt. And maybe a lot of people from various groups felt that way when they pulled that lever. Raihan, you've argued that for a Republican to win in New York today, he has to stand for economic growth, public sector reform, and middle-class families. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think when you look at someone like Bill de Blasio talking about the Tale of Two Cities, it's a very compelling message. Yet the thing is that one of the reasons why New York City is home to so many poor people is that New York City is actually very attractive to poor people. If you think about it at the most basic level, if you're someone with a very entry-level job, you know, it's great to not have to own an automobile. It's great to be able to commute to more affluent consumers so you can take a job as a busboy, so you can take one of those jobs on the first rungs of the economic ladder. The problem with New York City is that it's very hard for a lot of those people who arrive as less skilled immigrants to climb the economic ladder. So the question is, how do you actually facilitate that? And I think that one of the big barriers is the lack of affordable housing. But when candidates in New York City talk about affordable housing, they tend to talk about affordable housing programs rather than the real increases in supply that will make housing prices saner and more accessible.
But didn't Mayor Bloomberg undertake aggressive rezoning of the city to allow for exactly that, just more and more and more housing construction? But then it turned out to be mostly high-income housing because that's what developers make the most money building?
This is one of the little understood things about these rezonings that happen across New York City. For every upzoning, for every increase in density that was permitted by them, you also had downzonings across the city. And those downzonings didn't get a lot of attention, but in the end, they had a very big effect as well on our ability to build housing.
Places like on Staten Island and some other residential neighborhoods to protect themselves from the development that they didn't want?
Absolutely. There are a lot of folks who say, well, I want to protect the character of my neighborhood, and that certainly is very sympathetic. The problem is for the city as a whole, that makes the city as a whole less affordable.
So in your opinion, is Joe Loda running the campaign that you think a Republican needs to run to have a chance?
Well, here's the challenge for someone like a Joe Loda. Joe Loda had to win a Republican primary. And when you look at the small number of Republicans in New York City, they tend to be in places like Western Queens. They tend to be in Staten Island. They're homeowners. And, you know, that's very sympathetic.
Eastern Queens, right?
Exactly. And so the trouble is that electorate doesn't actually resemble the larger New York City electorate. And these are people who are oftentimes homeowners. They're disproportionately homeowners. And so they have different interests from the majority of the city that consists of people who are renters. So that's a big challenge trying to reconcile those two things.
Sam Roberts, want to add anything to that?
I think Rihanna is absolutely right about that, the big challenge is going to be to elect any Republican, to elect one who comes out of a Republican primary having lost Staten Island, at least according to the unofficial count, and has to remind people of the bad old days without scaring them to death, and particularly people, as we said, who many of whom did not live in the city then or weren't even born then. It's going to be a tough sell.
Leslie on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I'm a registered Democrat. I voted for Christine Quinn in the primary because I'm satisfied with the direction where New York is headed. And I'm voting for Joe Loda. I think socially he's progressive enough for me, but I think we need to take a hard line with the city business at hand. There are a lot of tough negotiations coming up. I think the city finances are going to be imperiled if the negotiations are not handled properly. And I'm concerned about crime. I don't want the city to go back to where it was 20 years ago. I feel very safe on the Upper West Side. I feel safe walking around the city in different areas, even in the evening. And I feel good about that. And I just feel like we've got to keep going in the direction where we're headed.
Leslie, thank you very much. So, Sam Roberts, do you think that Bill de Blasio has to make a pivot from talking overwhelmingly about stop and frisk when crime and the police are the topic to also talking more about keeping the streets safe?
I think absolutely, and I think you will see that he's not against stop and frisk. He never had the not against it completely in the way that John Liu was. He had a much more modulated position, and I think we'll see that even more. Also, he's taken off the hook. Remember, he's sort of inoculated now, now that a federal monitor has been appointed and that the city council has appointed an inspector general. That leaves the mayor a little bit more, the mayoral candidate, a little bit more leeway to go off on other issues, and I think we'll see that. Michael Powell's column in the Times today pointing out that Bloomberg was not exactly the non-liberal as much as he has been painted, and that Bill de Blasio and Bloomberg are not all that dissimilar. You'll find you'll find de Blasio becoming much more looking like a moderate than he did as a liberal to win the Democratic primary, in spite of Joe Lotus' attempt to sort of radicalize him.
Ayanna in Englewood, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I live in Englewood. I grew up in Harlem, and I hope to move back to the city, even with a master's degree in a very good professional park for you to make a living. Mm-hmm. I do want to say I voted for de Blasio, and I spoke with lots of my family members who are in Harlem and who voted. And I think the appeal for de Blasio, particularly to many African-Americans, was certainly just for one thing that the afro on his son was just aesthetically powerful, and I think that he represented not necessarily just the racial identity box, but the ability and the shift of identity or racial identity for Black Americans who like the intermarriage and see that as a well of hope for and more understanding racially. And some more understanding to come in terms of policies and how that can affect educational opportunities for African-Americans and other people of color in the city.
Ayanna, thank you very much. Changing notions of identity. Sam, on tomorrow's show, we will meet the third-party candidate who could potentially scramble the mayoral race, former Bronx Borough President Adolfo Carrion running on the Independence Party line. And most of the top-line commentary about that is usually that he's the only Latino candidate in the race, so he could draw Latino voters from de Blasio. Do you think Carrion could be a factor, and is his Latino-ness a reason?
Well, I think he could be, but I think at this point he is not. He would need money, he would need attention, and we haven't seen very much at all. Obviously, that's been overshadowed by both party primaries, and now he's coming to the fore as one of the candidates in the general election race. But so far, we've seen no indication that he's going to have a major effect on this race.
Any difference on that, Raihan?
I think that Carrion was a very compelling candidate for the Republican nomination, but he was not given a position. He was not in a position to run for it. So, unfortunately, I think it's unlikely that it's going to have a big effect.
And before you go, today is the second anniversary of the Occupy movement, and it's often written off as long gone. But is de Blasio's nomination a sign that the ripples of the Occupy movement live on well beyond Zuccotti Park, considering the campaign that he ran?
You know, I think that's right. One of your callers mentioned what I think is the most important issue in this race, which is that New York City really is on the precipice of a fiscal crisis, and the fact that pension contributions, health benefits, none of this came up during the Democratic primary debate, really. Rather, what we talked about was inequality. Certainly an important issue. It's been with us for a long time. But the fact the city has had this very bright, relatively speaking, fiscal picture for about 12 years, and that's going to change dramatically, barely came up at all. So
what,
I think that
what
does
they said every time,
absolutely true.
And what they said every time people like me asked was that they're not going to negotiate in public during a campaign with the public sector unions. They're going to negotiate behind closed doors. Do you think Loda is going to force that issue into the fore by taking some kind of bargaining position on health and pension?
Well, I think that he is going to try, and I think that, you know, he certainly is going to try to emphasize his expertise on these issues. But unfortunately, that electorate is so small, and that the concentrated influence of public sector workers is so big that it's a big challenge to get heard on something like that until there really is a crisis, until you hit the wall. That's why I'm guessing that the 2017 mayoral election is going to be very different from the 2013 mayoral election.
All right. Our first analysis of the 2017 mayoral election. You heard it here from Raihan Salon, senior fellow at R Street, contributor to the National Review and CNN. And we thank Sam Roberts, New York Times urban affairs correspondent. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Still to come on the Brian Lehrer Show this morning, the South Asian Miss America Twitter storm meets the post-plastic surgery Julie Chen. What do these two television beauty stories have in common? That's next. Why are so many special ed kids taken to emergency rooms during the school day? Beth Fertig on her WNYC investigative report. The Pulitzer Prize-winning Associated Press investigative reporters who reveal the NYPD's Muslim demographics unit, and how the New York art scene interacts with the New York real estate scene. All that coming up. Stay tuned.